everyone, Baseball America Prospect Podcast here. JJ Cooper, Ben Badler, actually in the same room, you know, because we're here at the Futures game. We're in D.C. We just finished off a long, fun day at the ballpark. Long weekend, because we also had the prospect pad yesterday, which was really fun as well. But this is what we love to do. And we wanted to talk about, share a little bit, you know, kind of what we saw and kind of share that with you guys. And the first thing that stands out, obviously, is Futures game today. We saw a lot of home runs. We saw a lot of power arms. We saw really a really, really fun game is, I guess, the best way I would describe it. What did you think?
Yeah, I think other than, you know, there wasn't really a defensive gem, a big defensive highlight.
Buddy Reed's.
Yeah, it was good. It wasn't like, you know, Eloy jumping over the wall or something like that. It really sticks out. But otherwise, I mean, I think you saw, you know, Tatis's arm at third base. You saw power and BP, and certainly in the game, you saw some of those balls. Certainly some scouts, among others, were wondering what exactly is in those baseballs that's making them...
It was definitely the major league ball.
Yeah, it was certainly carrying some of those line drives.
In a way that they did not carry in BP.
I mean, even just seeing like Yusniel Diaz and Ke'Bryan Hayes, just the ball carrying off their bat. And then those guys do have some raw power, not taking...
But they haven't had game power yet.
Right.
That's something where maybe the major league ball is a very wonderful thing for them.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, you saw a lot of... I mean, Peter Alonso, the way he hit that ball, that's going out with any baseball, any ball.
Peter Alonso, you could... Yeah, it does not matter if you threw a 1910, you know, mush ball up there.
Yeah, and you saw, I mean, like, Luis Basabe turning around 102 miles an hour. Some of these guys, Taylor Trammell's hitting approach, Tatis, Kirilloff, his... Really young guys with pretty advanced hitting approaches, I thought was really fun to watch.
It was a lot of fun to watch. We also saw, I mean, yes, Hunter Green gave up a couple of really hard hits. We also saw an 18-year-old, Hunter Green, throw pretty much at a level of velocity that in Major League Baseball, he's not in majors yet, but in Major League Baseball, this was with StatCast, in Major League Baseball, you're talking about Aroldis Chapman, okay, Jordan Hicks,
yeah.
And, okay, if you want a cautionary tale, I would throw Mauricio Cabrera, who could throw 102, 103. On a, you know, but I saw a stat, Darren Willman, I think, tweeted out tonight, that Hunter Green threw more 100-mile-an-hour pitches in this game. And he only pitched, do remember, basically an inning. But he threw more than, like, there were like six or seven teams have not thrown that many in the StatCast era.
Yeah, his arm speed is phenomenal. The way he just is able to generate. I mean, he didn't throw a fastball under 100.
We saw 103, and 100 was, he took a little something off.
Yeah.
But the other thing is you also, now this was a fastball-dominated game. We actually talked to players after the game. Pitchers were like, yeah, I know they were looking fastball, but it's a futures game. We want to show what we can do with our fastball too, and so it's best against best. But we also did see, you know, Adonis Medina's changeup had some, you know, he threw a really good changeup. Sean Anderson threw a really good changeup. Dakota Hudson's slider was really good. We saw Jesus Luzardo showed three pitches. I mean, it was something where you did see some flashes. Tuki Toussaint showed three pitches. He's always been a fastball, curveball guy, but talked about it after the game about it. It's like, no, the changeup's coming along. It is something where it's becoming a useful pitch. We saw a lot of that as well. The other thing that's fun about this, though, is and we see it most every year, you have the guys who this is kind of the next step for them. You know, this is for a number of the guys in here, top prospects in the game, Fernando Tatis Jr., Joe Adell, Hunter Green, who we just talked about. These are guys who this is almost, I wouldn't describe it, I mean, again, they were all excited to be here too, but it's almost an expected step. They were the top prospects in the draft, right. You know, or internationally. You know, they've performed, and this is
Bo Bichette, Ke'Bryan Hayes, or dad played in the big league. They've been around this kind of thing for their whole
big
life.
League clubhouse. Is not like, ooh, what is this? It's like, no, I was four and I was running around with these. But you also at these games have guys for whom this is a really, really big deal because. You know, talking to C.D. Pelham after the game, the Rangers reliever, this is not something that he was coming into the season going, you know, if I can just get to that futures game. That was not on his radar. And playing in front of this many fans on national TV with his family there, it was a very, very big deal for a guy like that. And again, he's not the only one, but there are guys at this game that this is like, wow, I really am on the right track. And it's a validation in that way. And also a taste of what big league life could be like that they didn't expect coming into the season they were going to see that this year.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think especially, really, almost all the guys, when you get into that big league stadium and see like, oh, there's a third deck here and a fourth deck. I think it's can be a little intimidating for some of them. But yeah, seeing a guy like a C.D. Pelham or, you know, Adonis Medina was not like a big time international signing. He's gotten a lot more attention. But yeah, to see those guys get the opportunity to play in that kind of atmosphere and everything that goes with it. I mean, MLB takes care of all these guys pretty well, so it's cool to see those guys get that experience.
The other thing that you get from almost every player, you know, in the clubhouse afterwards asking them, it's amazing how many players say, man, that game flew by. Now, if you're a pitcher, obviously it's like it's a little different situation. Almost Pelham and I'm trying to think, Pelham pretty much, I think, is about the only, I mean, this is mainly a starting pitcher game.
Right.
With few exceptions. So, if you're a starting pitcher and you're normally used to pitching, 75 to 100 pitches and all of a sudden you're throwing 20, yes, the game's going to fly by. But even for the position players, they talk about how, man, that felt like that was an hour. You know, it just flies by. But there's a reason for that, which is you're trying to soak all this in, and you can't because it's there are guys for whom this is one of the best baseball moments they've ever had. And it's kind of cool to see they're not jaded about it. They are absolutely positively just thrilled that they got to experience this.
Yeah, and it's even for some of the guys who we'd love to have, and Vladdy Jr. is injured, obviously. But there's some guys where it's like, we'd love to have like every single player be like the best prospect in baseball. Like, there's certain limitations with the roster rules, every team having to have somebody in there.
We always, every year, the world first base spot's going to be a tough one to find.
Yeah, luckily we've had Yordan Alvarez the past couple of
years. Yordan's going to graduate, it's going to be rough.
but yeah, so there's some things that make it tricky. But yeah, so for some of those guys who aren't quite as at the level of like a Bichette or a Tatis, it's still cool seeing them kind of get the opportunity to play in that game.
Peter Alonso is a guy who, again, had a great day today. Put on a show in BP, hit probably the most majestic home run of all the home runs, and we say all, there were eight.
That was a good adjective, yeah.
But the most majestic home run, enjoyed it probably more than anyone else. Like, he did not leave that batter's box until he had found it, he had tracked it.
I think Taylor Trammell enjoyed his, what he thought was his home run.
Yes, he did.
But he did make up for it, he still got to third base, so.
Yeah, He probably his slowest home to third time he's ever had, because he actually got to first base, pointed to the dugout like, hey, do you see that? I hit a homer.
That was hilarious.
And they were yelling back at him, no, you didn't. but yeah, I mean, like Peter Alonso said afterwards, like, this is, this is something you should enjoy this. And it is true. Like, again, we had the prospect pad yesterday. And if you don't know, basically we do this. We invite all the players, and yesterday we had 47 of the 50. The other three who weren't there actually had not gotten into town in time.
Right.
Tuki Toussaint was being told at the time, like, hey, Tuki, you are going to the Futures game, as we were having the prospect pad. So we unfortunately couldn't have Tuki there yesterday. But Louisville Slugger, gives them bats. Wilson gloves, Evo Shield gives them. I mean, they get a lot
which
of
came in handy with the Evo Shield.
Yes.
Luis Urias got hit right on the
Luis Urias got hit on the Evo Shield. They get molded Evo Shields and all that. But then we also interview them and all, and it really is fun because you get these kind of situations where you kind of get to just talk to the players, and kind of in a little bit more relaxed environment. And that was a lot of fun. I mean, by the way, you called him George. I want to see, is it George Guzman?
Yeah, I asked him. I said, how do you prefer to pronounce your first name? He goes, oh, George. You can call me George. I said, you sure? Jorge? We can go Jorge,
yeah.
George. Oh, George.
Okay,
so.
But George Guzman, I mean, that was a fun interview, just watching you guys, listening to it. I mean, but there was a lot of fun interviews there yesterday. A lot of them are up on the YouTube page. But what are some of the things that stood out to you that, from kind of getting that chance to kind of talk to players a little bit in depth? I mean, we had... 5-10 minute interviews.
Yeah, I, one of the guys I really liked talking to was Miguel Amaya, mm-hmm. the Cubs catcher. Kid, he's still a kid.
He is.
Young,
I mean, he's
young prospect out of Panama. I mean, I remember him when he signed. He was 16 years old in that unbelievable 2015
and we
international signing class. So.
Yes, we do mean unbelievable.
Yeah,
he's behind because he's in the futures game and he's having a but he's a great a great young catcher who's in low A. So it's like, come on, dude. Vlad's in, Vladdy.
Jimenez, Leody, Taveras, Tatis.
Soto's one of the best hitters in the National League. So, I mean, come on, Miguel, you got to speed this up.
Yeah, Pache, so many guys from that class. Javier, Hylan Ortiz, we'll see what happens. But I really like talking to Miguel Amaya. Fully bilingual already, which is super impressive and also...
very useful as a catcher.
Absolutely. I mean, we were just talking about him building, he's like, the pitcher, everybody on the pitching staff needs to be my best friend. And I said, well, the way you're hitting and the way you're defending, I think you're probably their best friend too. So, but it was cool just hearing him talking about, growing up playing baseball in Panama. It's a lot different than in the Dominican Republic, and their exposure to scouts is a lot different. And just hearing about his, the way he came over to the States and has developed both offensively and defensively. And yeah, just getting a lot of these guys, especially for the international players, just getting their... kind of like their origin story is always mm-hmm. super interesting. You talked about with Guzman. We'll have that interview up hopefully soon. But it's a lot different than a lot of the kids who grow up playing in the States and go play high school and travel ball and all that. So I don't know who was the guy or some of the guys for you that...
Taylor Trammell. Taylor Trammell had a very good weekend.
I really enjoyed talking to him,
but
too.
But Taylor Trammell, I mean, we're both from Georgia. So we had we started talking Georgia high school football for a little while and all that. But just like talking to Taylor, during the interview and kind of asking him, Tim talking about his approach and how him saying about how if he gets a four-pitch walk, four pitches, four balls, it takes a walk, that's a win to him in so many ways. He's like, for one, I'm getting on base, and if I get on base, I can do things when I'm on base. And for two, if I get a four-pitch walk, well, for one, okay, that means that 3-0 he missed and I didn't chase. And the other thing is I know the next time I'm probably going to get a pitch I really can hit. It's a very advanced approach for a young hitter, but also him then talking about his defense, which has always been kind of a little bit more of the question, and him saying, I am a little bit better going to my right still than I am to my left, but I try to power shag a lot. That's very important, and the thing is, he said, I know I'm getting to balls this year that I did not get to last year, like where I'm getting to it. And that's something, it's funny, it triggered the story. Tom Verducci had a great story about Mike Trout in for Sports Illustrated last week, and Trout talking about it and like how he's not giving up on balls and he's getting the balls he didn't think he'd get to. Taylor Trammell's telling the same story, and he's doing it in the minor leagues. Like, no, right. I'm getting the balls that I wasn't getting to. That's, again, it's for all these players. They're always working on things, but it's fascinating to kind of see, like, this is kind of my to-do list right now. And again, Trammell was very impressive. There are a lot of, to be honest, there are a lot of guys who are very impressive.
Yeah, Joe Adell, that was a super engaging guy. For 19 years old, especially.
Down to earth and very engaging. Like, you can see Joe Adell has a chance. Like, the tools are, I joked with him. I did say, it's like, you're not the athlete your sister is, but you're really good. Because he's tweeted some of her videos, like, she's posted, and like, box jumps and all. His box jumps are absurd. Her box jumps are absurd, but Joe Adell is the guy who really has a chance, if it all comes together, to be a star. Like, he's got athleticism, he can run, he's physical, he can hit for power, he can hit for average, it could be all there.
Yeah.
But the other part of that, the other component about it, to be a star, is he's also a guy, Chris Bryant, had this, where you, even when they're, again, Chris a little older, but when you talk to Chris, when he was in minors, it's like, he's already uber professional, where you see this. You see the same thing with Joe, where it's like, he's a guy who's going to be kind of one of the faces of the clubhouse down the road.
And in a very authentic way, too. It's not like a fake put on.
No, there's no
something for the media.
There's no over polish. It's just like, it's just who he is.
Yeah, it's very authentic. I thought it came across that way.
And that's every interaction I've had going back to high school with him. It's always kind of been that way. It's very impressive. But Joe Adell stood out. I'm trying to think of who else. There were a lot of guys who really, it was impressive. Elliot Ramos. again, we're talking about, because we're talking about young guys. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I'm old, but I mean, we're talking about when they say, you know, we're talking about guys who are 18, like,
yeah.
like Elliot Ramos talking about, like, I know I haven't had the greatest year, but at the same time, I really made strides. I feel like I'm better, I'm much better at the plate now. I said, but at the same time, I'm 18 and I'm facing 22, 23 year olds a lot. I know that it's going to take a little time. Like, no, that's true.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed talking to Jesus Sanchez too a little bit. Just, we were talking about him and, because he's known Wander Franco. They kind of came out of the same program in the Dominican Republic, obviously several years apart. So, but he kind of knew who he was. He's like, and now they're obviously teammates of the Rays. Mm-hmm. He's like, people think I'm a good hitter. He's like, no, this guy is so good. And I totally agree with him. And imagine me bringing up Wander Franco.
Stunning development that happened, you know. And no, we have reached the point where last night we held after the prospect pad, we had a meeting about the top 100 and about midseason top 10s, kind of work them through and spend a lot of time on that. And during that, we all looked up what Wander Franco did, and you know, he hit for the cycle last night with two home runs.
Yeah, 5 for 6, I think it was. Oh my God.
And then so as we're walking out of the futures game tonight, we're talking about the futures game, but we looked up what Wander Franco did tonight. Only had a hit tonight, I think, but you know, where it's just like, yes, Wander Franco has reached the point where every night we have to know what Wander Franco's doing because he's that good. But, you know, again, like, the other thing that just does stand out, like you mentioned Miguel Amaya. Miguel Amaya's BP stood out to me because really easy oppo power. Now, they weren't leaving the yard, but if you're going oppo in BP and you're hitting 14 feet up on a 15-foot fence in center field, you know, right center, but really more towards center, probably 390 where that fence was. Yeah, that's some impressive carry. And, you know, again, he was a guy, again, one thing you do have to remember is I tweeted about this, like, we got AAA guys in this game. We got low A guys in this game. He's the guy, Miguel is a guy who's in low class A. And not only that, but he had the weirdest situation here. He left the game. K'Bert Ruiz replaced him. And then it is an all-star game. I hope Kaybert's okay, but Kaybert took a ball, foul ball, right off of his throwing hand, had to leave the game. Miguel Amaya, you're done. You're kind of cooling down, relaxing. It's like, boom, you're back in the game. Oh, yeah, by the way, you're catching Adonis Medina, who's just, I mean, bringing, you know, nasty stuff
pitch after pitch. And you have to have the meeting beforehand. Okay, so what pitches do you throw?
Well, I have this really nasty changeup. A fastball really moves, and it's like 96. Then let's go. And so, you know, again, like you are seeing guys who are at different levels of their development. But also one of the things that happens with that, though, is it stands out is when you see an 18-year-old. Well, you remember, you mentioned Eloy Jimenez. A couple of years ago, Eloy Jimenez had a game where he just, like, it was the Eloy Jimenez futures game.
Yeah, Trout did it one year, too.
Yes.
Yeah. And you talk about guys who are those lower-level prospects. What stood out to me when you mentioned BP and that was Sully Matias.
Mm-hmm.
I was super excited to watch him take BP. I hadn't seen him since he was 16 years old when he's in the Dominican Republic, at least not in person. And, you know, you've seen what he's done this year. The power
26 home runs
are absurd, especially for a guy who doesn't make a ton of contact.
No, if he hits the ball,
if he hits the ball, which he was doing obviously in BP, he has the loudest BP of anybody there. And then in the game, to go out and hit a fastball on the outer third. Just to go with where the ball was pitched. And just hit it over the fence, opposite field.
Line drive.
At 19 years old, like, I think he's listed at 6'3", 200. I think he's heavier than that in a good way.
Yeah,
like, there's just, like, muscle all over his back and shoulders. And to do that against Justice Sheffield, who's a AAA guy, I mean, I'm sure I'll forget it at some point, but that definitely sticks in my mind. And to me, like, I thought actually, like, his issues to me are more pitch recognition and plate discipline, because the swing itself, I think, works, and the power is, oh my goodness.
He's fascinating, and I mean that, like, in the best sense of the word. If it all comes together, again, we talk about Joe Adell, if it all comes together, Sulamitayus could be a star because he could be a 35, 40 home run a year right fielder. I mean, that is well within...
Could be even above that. I mean, we'll see what happens with, right, the baseball, the offensive environment.
But I'll say that, like, you know, I still am in a world where that's, like, to me, like an 80 grade hit, right, you know, power, but maybe it's not now. But yeah, but you know, but he could be that. Now, again, now he, the hurdles are pretty hefty because he's striking out 37% of the time.
I still don't think he's, I mean, we just heard us talk about him. I don't even think he's a top 100 prospect yet.
Because you gotta, you want to see him make just a little bit more consistent contact. Like, the ceiling is immense, but the guys who strike out, you know, he 37% of the time, like he is, it's a very hard road. Now,
there's an outcome, yeah, where he goes to Japan and hits 50 home runs.
Leonard Valentin goes, yep, I
know. William Opeña.
You know, but, I mean, really, you know, or he may be, again, like, want to bring up a guy who did do that. Joey Gallo walked a little more, and that helped. But Joey Gallo is a guy with immense power who struck out a lot. I think at times like 35, 36%. Who's gone to the big leagues and hit a lot of homers. Now, Gallo still needs to make a little bit more contact because it's, you know, the batting average is, and the on-base percentage is suffering because of the batting average. But, again, that's something where he also could end up being, you know, a guy who does hit for a lot of homers and a low average, which still could be a pretty useful guy.
Yeah, I mean, with hit, like you said, compared to Gallo, Gallo walks more, which is what I wish Matias was able to at least have the patience, but the swing... Like it's probably a little more conducive to hitting
than Gallo's.
Than Gallo's, yeah.
Gallo's
works for him.
You don't, yeah. Mortal men could not use that.
If you don't have Joey Gallo power, it's not advisable.
Yeah, again, like if you look back, if you want to be optimistic about it, I talk about that Hickory team way too often because it's still one of the best minor league teams.
That's an exciting team.
That Hickory team, which now I believe everyone but the shortstop, starting shortstop.
It was Gallo, Alfaro.
So Alfaro was the catcher, Guzman at first.
Ronald Guzman, that's
Ryan
right.
Ruel was the second baseman. He ended up moving, and you know, but he was the second baseman. Shortstop did not make it. Gallo was the third base. And then your outfield was Nick Williams, Lewis Brinson, and Nomar Mazara.
Oh my.
So every...
That's on a low A team. Think of a stacked minor league team. It's like a double A kind of team. That is
funny thing is, and by the way, the best athlete on that team has also played the majors, but it's a different. Jordan Akins was drafted by the Browns this year, so if he makes it this year, you could say that the DH also made it to the big leagues, just a different sport. Like he was the best athlete of all.
So Dee Podesta has him right with the Browns.
Yes. Yeah.
So all right.
You know, but the thing about it is if you want to be, you know, that team had a ton of guys who struck out a ton, and I mean a ton. Lewis Brinson struck out a ton, Joey Gallo struck out a ton, you know, but, you know, they did put it all together at least to make the majors. Now, we're still waiting on some of these guys to have, you know, the breakout season, but again, yeah, Suli is a very fascinating dude. Another teenager, Luis Garcia, is a guy, didn't have a chance to do a ton in the game, but... I've gotten a lot Luis Garcia this weekend because I saw him Friday night where he had two hits also in Potomac. And then prospect pad then today. I feel like I'm going to miss Luis Garcia tomorrow. You know, but, you know, teenager, 18-year-old who's already in high A and watching him in BP, he's like, again, he's got more pop than your average 18-year-old middle infielder.
Yeah, and he knows what he's doing on the field, too. The baseball IQ definitely sticks out. Just working that wall. You know, C.D. Pelham was a lefty. You know, left-on-left guy. He's pumping upper 90s.
Yeah, left-on-left.
Fastballs. And, all right, well, you know, swung and missed the first one and then worked his way back. Drew a walk, went first to third. I mean, it's not anything sexy. It's not any big highlight reel stuff. But if you're watching it and you're watching him all season, too, you can see, like, that's indicative of the kind of baseball acumen that he has.
Which, by the way, he's a Nationals teenager, so he has a good model to follow
that's
on
right.
this, which is
his on the playoff.
Juan Soto, who's like, you know, hey, you know, I might be 19, but I can work my way back from 0-2 better than almost anyone in the majors. So.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to say he might be in the major leagues.
No, no. Sorry, I was talking about, he's got a model.
Could be. I mean, they are moving their guys fast.
You know, yeah. I mean, but so again, I do think that there was just, again, just a really fun day. This is, again, this is one of those moments that we just look forward to all year, because we go to a lot of games. There is nothing else like this game for the amount of talent you see in one ballpark on one day.
And I've been to New Hampshire a lot this year.
Yes, and he's been to New Hampshire, and he can still say that.
Saying something. You know, we talk about the players getting excited. We get super excited, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and we've been, this is what, 10, I think, now, futures games for me, and probably
I think this is like, something like that for me. And it's like, it does not get old. It does not, if the day where I'm like, oh, I have to go to the futures game. It's the day that I should stop doing this, because, you know, we know we are fortunate to do this. We've told it to you. We'll tell it to you again. Thank you, subscribers, you know, because you guys are, you know, you all are what help us to do this.
Absolutely.
And we hope you enjoy what we're providing from it. But we try to, you know, we work really hard. You know, again, we were here for 4 hours after the prospect pad last night to try to make the best top 100, the best midseason top 10s we can. It would have been way more fun to basically have said, ah, shut it down, let's go, you know, get something good to eat. I didn't eat dinner last night instead. We are insane. I mean, I guess what we're saying. But it's, you know, but it's a good insane. We love doing this. And it really is, like, again, the other thing about it is going back to it, is it is fun to see that the players do understand how cool this event is. Like, Peter Alonso was just gushing afterwards about how fun this was. Sean Anderson was too. I guess I should say Buddy Reed was too. Let's call the Gators. They were all having a great time. And they were all proud of the fact that the Florida Gators had a guy who got the win, a guy who got a homer, and the guy who had the best defensive play in the game. Oh, they were pointing that out. So, you know, they said, just as Peter Alonso said, it's a great day for Gators today.
Yeah, it was, that was fun. I mean, the player, I don't know about you, but the player I enjoyed watching the most was Fernando Tatis Jr. Because, I mean, he's our number two prospect in the game right now. I think he showed why. He showed everything in the game. He made a nice defensive play at shortstop. When he was at third base, you could see the arm. In BP, you saw big, big power. And in the game, he showed pretty advanced feel for hitting. I mean, he's, again, like 19 years old. We're talking about these guys. Like, we think we would stop being impressed after seeing, like, Soto and Vladdy and all these guys, but, yeah.
But at the same time, it does stand out. Like, we are in a really weird time, in a good way. This is not normal. It is not normal to have this many 18 and 19-year-olds. Like, as you said, okay, Juan Soto, I mean, we could go on for Juan Soto for another. I could go on for an hour about Juan. He is, right now, there has never been, ever, there's never been a 19-year-old in the big leagues with this kind of approach. And when I say that, I went back and researched it. Like, you say in the integration era, which is a pretty, like, 1947 is pretty much, in some form, modern baseball, the beginning of modern baseball. The highest OBP that you find, like, guys do not put up 400 OBPs as a 19-year-old. The best players, the all-time greats, don't do that.
And this is from a guy who had, what, like 9 at-bats above
A-ball? I mean, this is a guy who, he never went to a futures game because at this time last year, he was hurt, and he had 20 games of low Class A experience. And this year, when the futures game rolls around, oh, I'm sorry, he's not at the futures game. Why? Because he's maybe right now the best hitter in the Nationals big league lineup. He's too busy playing for the big league club. That's insane, but you have him. You have Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who's, by the way, when he comes back, we'll see if he can hit 400 in the minors and have enough at-bats to qualify, which is crazy. And then you've got Fernando Tatis Jr. And then you've got, you know, again, we talk about Luis Garcia, who's in high A as an 18-year-old.
Yeah. And Andres then Jimenez, Leodis Taveras, these guys are...
Leodis Taveras. You got Hunter Green, who's 18 and was throwing 103 in the game today. You've got, again, you just keep going down the list, and it's like, this is crazy how
Hell
many guys...
yeah. Oh, my goodness.
It is. But it's awesome because, I mean, the reality of it is that one of the things we've seen... It is a partly because of the velocity of the power. It is a young man's game. I mean, the reality of it is that there are a thousand reasons that probably are part of it. But you look at it and you look at the number of 33, 34, 35-year-olds not named Nelson Cruz who are having productive seasons. It's a pretty short list. But the flip side of that is to look at the number of 21, 22, 23, 24-year-olds who are having very productive seasons, and it's a pretty long list. That's fun for what we do because we're seeing these guys move very quickly from being drafted or signed. Again, you're talking about the international class of 2015. That's 3 years ago. And we're talking about a who's who of the best prospects in baseball and a guy who's already graduated. That's crazy.
And I think a lot of it, too, is just the difference between how, especially in the Dominican Republic and Venezuela, too, how those amateur players are being developed, both as amateur players and then after they sign, too. I think both the trainers and the teams are doing a much better job on that than they were 10 years ago. I mean, 10 years ago, you know, you were giving guys a lot of money based on very limited game looks, and a lot of money was wasted. Now you look at, like, if you just look at the top five prospects in a given signing class, you have guys like Gleyber, Devers, Eloy, Franklin Barreto. You have, you know, Vladdy and Andrés Giménez and Leody, and, you know,
and Wander Franco.
Wander Franco. I mean, the five from last, Everson Pereira going to the Appy League already. Yeah, I mean, the 2017 class, I think that's going to be similar to the 2015 class, and I actually think it's way far ahead to some extent, but the 2019 and even some of the 2020 guys, like, these guys are playing in a lot more games as amateurs than ever before.
Unpack that, because again, this is something, when you talk about this, if you go back 10 years, you don't have to go back 10 years. What I've seen, and I want to ask you because you see a lot more than I do, but even 5 years ago, you know, you saw international players who really, they were ready for a showcase, but they had very little in-game experience.
Very little, yes.
And you'd see things like, I remember for Tournament of Stars, no, for NHS, was it NHSI one year?
Yeah, they brought a group of guys over to North Carolina.
Jalen Ortiz, I think, was probably the...
Yeah, Miguel Amaya was actually there.
Miguel Amaya,
we were talking
about
it. It was.
I remember writing notes on Amaya.
It was probably 45 degrees there for a bunch of kids from the Dominican Republic and, like, obviously Panama in Amaya's case, who never. That was funny.
But again, you were starting to see they were playing games. They weren't just basically doing workouts. That's made a massive difference, hasn't it?
Oh, totally. I mean, like 10 years ago, I think that around that time, probably a little less than that, they started the Dominican Prospect League. And now it's like you go all over the Dominican Republic and you can see games. You can see games all the time. Maybe not in those, like, big, like an IPL or the, you know, the JDB. Those guys do run a whole bunch of games too. But, you know, these trainers now are just saying, all right, well, especially like MLB, the trainers are getting together and saying, all right, well, let's pool my guys together and we'll play a game against this guy's academy today. And it doesn't have to necessarily be a big event. And maybe there's only a handful of scouts there that day, but the kids are getting game experience. They're playing
games.
It's
an entirely different situation.
They're working on, you know, they're recognizing pitches. It's not just some guy grooving the ball over the plate to them in BP, who they take BP from all the time. It's learning game situations, learning how to turn a double play in games, learning, all right, even just, you know, you see a guy, and you still see it at that level because the kids are 14, 15, 16 years old, but, you know, you see a kid, just the way he feels, a fungo, a ground ball, a shortstop, and then it's like, field it, shuffle, 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 throw the ball and air it out. Well, okay, the runner, there's a batter who's running up the first base line, like, he's safe, you know? Like, now you're actually seeing these kids who know, all right, I got to field the ball and I got to get rid of it fast.
I think there's no coincidence to it. You just talked about it. Nowadays, when you look at the top international prospects in a class, it's really the same thing as looking at the top in a draft class, where it doesn't mean everyone's going to hit, but it means the success rate now. Again, if you look at that now compared to 10 years ago, you just mentioned 2017. Okay, your/our top five. Wander Franco, who is one of the better prospects in baseball right now, at this moment.
Absolutely.
You know, Daniel Flores, which is a tragedy beyond all tragedies. And I mean, that's just awful that, you know, we lost him last year. Ronnie Mauricio, really good prospect. Everson Pereira, already in the Appy League. And George Valera, who, you know, was starting to put on show after show, you know, very quickly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Julio Rodriguez, Carlos Rodriguez, both in the Dominican Summer League All-Star game today. Wanted to get down there, but had to choose a futures game for that.
Yeah, it was a tough call.
Yeah.
It really is. But, like, Luis Garcia was the number three prospect in 2016.
Yeah. Eric Pardino is, you know, another guy in the Appy League already, you know, and he's from Brazil, so it's different over there, too. But, yeah, I mean, these guys, it's both before they signed, and then even after they signed, they have, like, this unofficial July 2nd league now where all these guys who signed this year, you know, I don't know every single player who's playing or sitting out, but they have, like, a tricky league, right?
Which I love the tricky league.
The unofficial league for July 2nd. Players that can't officially play in games until next year. But, you know, not only that, where they're getting some game experience, but just the way teams are handling these guys and developing these players and investing in them, where when they come over, like, these guys are ready to go right away.
Another,
not in all cases. I mean, again, like, there's still guys who are more raw, and you gotta have patience. You got to have patience with all these guys still. But, I mean, that's why you're seeing some of these guys coming so fast and being a lot more advanced, I think, especially the top guys in the class.
Yeah, and then the 2015 class. I'm looking at our rankings from 2015. Okay, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was not in this game because he's hurt, but he's the best prospect in baseball right now.
Yeah, also should be in the big leagues. Yes. But
Andrés Giménez was in this game today.
Mets number one prospect.
Leody Taveras was in this game today.
Rangers number one prospect.
Sully Matias, number seven, was in this game today. Juan Soto was not in this game. He ranked 13th because he's already graduated from being a prospect. And again, that doesn't include, we've got Christian Pache, we've got Gilberto Celestino, who's having a good year in the New York Penn League.
Wander
Miguel Amaya was in this game. He was number 22. It is crazy.
That's the Tatis year, too. I mean, I wrote that in the superlative story today that, like, you know, a lot of people were not in on Tatis. And that's from talking to the scouts at the time about Tatis. And, you know, put it this way, like, MLB has their annual international showcase every year. And sometimes, like, there have been a couple of years they've invited a player who's, like, the son of a former big leaguer. But they get all the guys who I think are the top guys or they think are the top guys there. They didn't invite Fernando Tatis Jr. to the MLB international showcase. And I don't think anybody was saying, oh, how could this guy not come? There were a lot of people who were very skeptical of him at the time. And very quickly, you know, credit one to the White Sox, to Marco Patti and those guys for identifying him and believing in Fernando Tatis. Major credit to the San Diego Padres for stealing him right out from underneath the White Sox. I don't think we can post about Fernando Tatis Jr. on Twitter without getting a bunch of really sad responses from White Sox fans. But, I mean, it's not like it was that long ago that this, I mean, it was very quickly that he really got a lot better, and it's a huge credit to Tatis.
We had two guys in this game who were traded, who were acquired by teams before they ever played an official game.
Luzardo, the other one?
Jordan Alvarez.
Jordan
Alvarez was originally a Dodger. The funny thing with that one is that the Astros were the other team, really, if I remember correctly, that was in on Jordan. The Dodgers signed him and then traded for Josh Fields before he ever played an official game for the Dodgers.
That's right.
And
here
he is, you know. But, no, I've said before on the podcast, I think, if the Padres call you and they're interested in a player who is playing, either has yet to play, is playing Tricky League or something, has yet to play a game, or is playing in the DSL, I would generally say to the normal GM, you probably don't want to do that deal because it's probably fair to say that they may know more about that player than you
do. There are so many Dominican Summer League. I mean, we've seen them already get traded, but there's a lot of those guys that get asked about in trades. And, like, so some of the time the conversation, because I've had guys just, like, tell me this, who've been involved in these talks, and they're like, yeah. So the GM gets a phone call from another GM. Would you be willing to include this, you know, Dominican Summer League player in trade? Let me think about it. I'll get back to you. Calls up the guys down.
Who is this guy?
Yeah, exactly. what do we have on this guy? Who is he? Like, so, and then, you know, and some, I think some teams have it better integrated than others, but like, there's definitely some guys where they were like, no, we don't want to risk. It used to be, I think, more like we saw Francis Martez get traded from the Marlins to the Astros. And I think, you know, we're still seeing these guys get traded, but I think it used to be some guys, and it actually happened in the Marlins case, where you think, well, if I'm the GM, what are the odds I may even have my job by the time this guy gets to the big leagues? Now I think we're seeing some guys saying, like, I don't want to be the next, I don't want to give away the next Fernando Tatis Jr.
The other thing I think that used to be the case was is that you could acquire a guy like that in trade unless a team had spent a lot of money on him. Like, if a guy was like a big bonus guy, then it was something. But other than that, it's like, oh, we only spent 50. I've had scouts tell me, you know, it used to be like you could ask for a guy and it's like, oh, they only spent $50,000 on him. You know, they would like, again, it would not filter up.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Some of it's communication, but some of the, I mean, Alexander Canara is not having the best year, so he's maybe not the best example, but like, sometimes you know pretty quickly, like, oh my goodness, like this guy we signed for, back in the day, like, or when the Brewers signed Orlando Arcia, they were like, huh. Yeah, they gave him like 80, 90 grand, something like that. And they were like, this is the best guy we signed.
And that, it's not surprising that happens because we're talking about 16-year-olds. And just like, you know, 16-year-olds can basically, you sign them. And it's not shocking that some of them show up the next year and you go, this is a different dude than the guy that we signed.
It's not like you have, all, you know, 3 years of SEC or ACC. You know, Kevin Smith maybe is like an exception, a guy who can really change.
But even that. Yeah. The funny thing about that is on both sides in the draft, you have guys who are drafted, and almost immediately you'll have some guys. It's like I've had scouts tell me, it's like they go like, "What did we see in this guy?" You know, like in the negative, it'd be like, "Oh, that went wrong." And there are other guys they get drafted, and then it's like, "How did we get this guy in the 32nd round?" This guy's better than anyone we took, you know.
In the... Or even like a second round, like a Bo Bichette or you know, Hans Kraus maybe. Like, yeah, some of those guys, they get to pro ball. And I think it's real, too. Like, you can't, like, I don't just dismiss everything a guy does in, like, rookie ball as a small sample. I mean, you know, if we're talking about 25, 30 bats, okay, that is a small sample. But I think it's meaningful what a guy does, you know, if he's playing almost a full Arizona League or Gulf Coast League season using a wood bat, facing professional pitching compared to, you know, especially for the high school guys, I think you can tell a pretty good amount to alter your pre-draft reports on a guy.
Absolutely. And I would say that and the flip side also true, which is again, the thing you don't want to overreact, and when I talk to scouts, like I do New York Penn League, you know, I think you've done
the
Penn
League. Yeah, I do our Gulf Coast League too.
You know, like, is there are times where you go, okay, like I've had, you know, guys like, I think he's just tired. Like, you know,
that's context is huge, especially in the GCL where it's like
it's 108. Oh,
yeah,
you know,
especially if you're a catcher.
You know, but it's like I think he was just tired, and so you say, okay, we're going to give a pass on that. But sometimes you look back on that and you go, no, that was our first indicator of a problem. Or sometimes, yeah, and it's not always true. There's no absolutes in this. We've both been doing this long enough. I think we're both basically, you know. You do this long enough, and it makes you have to be more humble because you've been wrong on it so many times.
Absolutely.
But Mace, again, like an example the other way, like a guy can have a great debut, like Mason Martin with the Pirates, who was a later round pick, who absolutely tore up the GCL last year.
Big fan of his last year.
Yeah. And then he goes this year. Okay, if you destroy the GCL like he did, it is a reasonable thing to say, we are moving you up to the South Atlantic League. And Mason Martin went to the South Atlantic League and discovered that the South Atlantic League is a significant step up from the Gulf Coast League. And was now he's back down in, I believe, the Appy League now because he was not ready for the South Atlantic League. Again, it happens. But the thing that stands out, though, at the same time, though, is that that doesn't mean you do not, that those are not indicators. It just means they're not absolute indicators.
Yeah, I think it's enough to move the needle some. You don't want to stray too far, but there are definitely some times where you realize, you dig enough, you learn more about context and how a guy was evaluated as an amateur, what he's doing as a pro. There definitely can be, and I'm sure there will be, some changes as we start. Man, we got our league best tools coming up, and then pretty soon after that we got our league top 20 prospects list coming up. So and then we're heading out to Under Armour later this week, and I see some of the top 2019 draft picks.
For the second time this week, cause we saw a lot of them at the Junior Home Run Derby today, too.
Yeah. So there, see some of the top Dominican prospects, 2019 and 20. I'm going to see some of the USA 17 youth guys at some point over the next couple of weeks. So there's never like a slow
it
time
really,
here, but it's always fun.
It is fun. Like, if it wasn't for that, it would really, like... I will say, if you hated baseball, this would be the worst job possible. It's like, does it ever end? No, it's year round.
That's what I like. Finally, like, I'm dumb enough that, like, after 10 years, it kind of, like, sunk in where you always hear, like, you know, you want to hire, you know, if you're a team, you want to hire somebody at the entry level who's, like, passionate about baseball or just general life advice. If, you know, I'm sure everybody started to do something you're passionate about. And I realized, oh, that's right. Because if you weren't passionate about all of this and you didn't absolutely love all of what
you go
do,
insane
you would go insane and you just wouldn't want to do it at all. But this is like, all right, well, let's like, I can't wait to go out and see all these guys and write them all up and take all the video and break it all down. It's
no, and we know we are fortunate. I mean,
absolutely,
we've said, like, you know, there are 1,000 people out there who would love to do what we're doing, and we are very fortunate to get to do it, and we are aware of that. And it is something where you cannot work at Baseball America if it is not something where the problem that I have, you know, I think you have it too, is like, I want to consume more baseball. Like, baseball is a sport that you cannot stay on top of everything as much as you want to, because there are more games going on than it is possible to watch all of them. Like, it's not a sport. I mean, like, the reality is like, there are sports. Back when I did NFL stuff, I could actually, with shortcuts, I could watch every single NFL game. There, I don't care how much you condense the game down, you cannot watch even every major league game. They play every day. It does not stop. You don't have a week to, you know. And then you go, okay, but I want to be on top of Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball and College Baseball and the draft. And I want to know something about, I'll leave it to you. I trust you. Like, tell me what 16-year-olds I need to know about. But there's so much out there. But that's also what makes it awesome, is that there's so much out there.
Yeah, and there's so many... There's just, we have so many readers, and we got to talk to a bunch of them, you know, just this week or this weekend out here. There's so many fans, so many readers we have who love it just as much as we do. And just that.
You have to be. Yeah. I mean, look, if you are a casual baseball fan who has some interest in it, do not, I'm not trying to push you away. If you want to subscribe, hey, great. We will take your money. But we are out there for the hardcore fan because you are the people who love this the way we do.
Yeah, and it's just fun to, like, if you see us, like, at a game, like, say hello.
Yes,
we enjoy talking about it. We'll probably talk too long, and you're going to be like, oh, my God.
No, I'll say this. Stop, I'll appreciate it. I appreciate it because I've been out with my wife, and she mentioned to someone, and they go, oh, I'm a baseball fan. And she goes, well, you know, you may want to talk to my husband. And I've learned to dial it back a little bit because I've learned that if someone says they're a baseball fan, that doesn't mean that they want a lot of times the full force. They want the water
coming out. They don't want your thoughts on the minor league rule 5 day.
Right.
They want to know their...
Right. They'll throw something out and they'll ask a question about their team.
They want to know where Manny Machado is. Yeah.
They'll ask a question about their team and it's like, oh, you know that? And it's like, yes. And now do you want to know about their guy in low A that you've not heard about who's really going to be interesting in 3 years? Most people don't want to hear that. So... if you're one of our Baseball America fans, you see us at the game, you're going to want to hear about that. And I love talking about that.
Oh, yeah. No, I was getting questions today about Marco Luciano and all sorts of different, you know, more obscure prospects, too. And we just love talking about it.
You know, I mean, we do. I mean, that's, again, we're sitting here. It's now Monday. It's Monday, but we're like, no, we need to
record. We started this on Sunday.
Yeah, we started on Sunday and went into Monday recording this. Now we're going to put this up on Monday because it is Monday. So, but yeah, I mean, it is something where we love doing this. And again, If you aren't a subscriber and you want to join us, go to baseballamerica.com. Top of the page, just click join now. And you can... There is a plethora of stuff. I think we had like nine stories from the Futures game.
We'll have a whole bunch of more of the prospect pad interviews too. I think some of those especially.
Some of them are up, but yeah, really, but there's... Enjoy. Yeah, and again, and we're going to try to... When I say try, because there's a lot of great stuff in there. Like, and some of it we're going to try to turn into some, you know, bite-sized pieces. Like, we may end up doing a couple of podcasts that we just pull out some audio from some of those, because there's some really good stuff in there. You may do that, but we're also going to do some stories on it, because, again, there's a lot of great stuff. We want you all to see kind of a lot of that stuff, because, again, we don't... It's not very often that we have a chance, like, hey, we're going to talk 10 minutes with this player, and then 10 minutes with this player, and then 10 minutes with this player, and we kind of get to cover a lot of stuff. And, you know, again, that was... There's only so many hours a day. This is one time where it's like, no, they come to us. So for 7 hours, you know, that's what we did. And it was really, really fun. And we look forward to, we'll be doing this in Cleveland 12 months from now.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm already...
Unless you're at the DSL All-Star game that week.
No, I'll always go to the Futures game. I may try to go to a DSL All-Star game, but no, I'm sure...
Hopefully there'll be one year where they don't interact.
Yeah, next year I'm sure we'll get... I'm not sure, but hopefully we'll get some...
I would not mind going to the DSL All-Star game with you too. I'm serious. That would check off a bucket list item for me. Really, it would.
Yeah.
And I would actually, my first Dominican trip, I would kind of not mind doing it with you. You know the lay of the land more than I do.
No, hopefully next year maybe we'll get some Eric Pardino and some Wander Franco in Cleveland or something like that.
Hey, I don't think that's a crazy thought at all. The crazy thought is the Rays move their guys a little slower. The crazy thought would be, if we're talking next year, it's like, you know, that way we were really looking forward to seeing Wander Franco. Can't believe he's in the big leagues.
Yeah.
That won't happen with the Rays. But
no. But by the time he's 20, I think he has a good chance to be there at that point.
That's a great bold prediction to end this on. It is now Monday, so we're going to wrap this up because we both have travel ahead of us. Later today now. So for Ben Badler, I'm JJ Cooper. So long, everybody.